Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins a little more than halfway down from the top of the page. If you like, you can count 28 lines from the top. You'll also notice we're beginning the Gemara opposite the second to last Tosfos with the Dibur Maskil V'Yotzo Chinam. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we have a topic heading on the side in the margin which reads under the Nosei, the topic heading, Be'inyan Yitzioso Shel Amo Ivriya Mirshus Odoin Shelo. We made reference to this Gezeres HaKosef in our previous shiur, the pasuk that said, V'yotzo chinom ein kosef. We're dealing with a girl, a Jewish girl, that was sold into a form of servitude. She's called an Amo Ivriya. She leaves her master's domain. She leaves her work obligation at the age of 12. Lama yesh drosha shel yitzia mibagrus. Why does the source refer to her leaving her work situation from age 12 and a half? That's called bagrus. In kvar dorshim sheyotzes minarus. If we already established that she leaves from the point that she reaches narus, which is age 12, where it's assumed that a girl produces the pubic hairs, which establish her as an adult, a godless. So once we know that from age 12, she is no longer working, if she had been sold into that work arrangement called Amo Ivriya, why then is there a drasha speaking about her exiting when she reaches Bagrus? As we go on in the Gemara, you will notice a house shape, and that's featured under the Mivneh heading, the structural note. You'll notice that we have written on this in our margin three tshuvos l'sheila. Now we'll see three answers to this particular question. As we go through the Gemara, though, there will be questions raised on the answers, and you'll notice that we highlight that with a double underline marking, and we've noted that as kushos ala tshuvos, questions on the answers. So we'll see Rabbah giving us answer one, Abaye questioning his answer, Abaye then providing us with his answer. We call that answer number two, followed by a question by Mar Barav Ashi, and finally number three, his answer to this question. Now the Gemara, Gufa. V'yotzo chinam elu yemei bagrus. V'yotzo chinam indicates that she leaves her work obligation when she reaches bagrus, 12 and a half years of age. If her, as we said, her father had sold her into this work obligation arrangement, but she leaves at age 12 and a half. Ein kosef elu yemei narus. Pasuk indicates that she actually leaves at age 12. The simple reading of the pasuk means that she leaves and there is no payment that is made to the one who purchased her, who received her services. It's true, he paid the father of the girl initially, but when she reaches that age, that's it. That's the end of the work arrangement, and there's no payment. That's the simple reading of the pasuk. But for our purposes, we want to understand, why is there any need to teach that she leaves at Bagrus if she's already not working anymore from a half year earlier? V'lichtoiv rachmona narus v'lo boi Bagrus. Let the Torah write that she leaves at Narus. You know, whereas you could have said, the Torah could have said, Ein Kosef. And you're telling me that means Yemei Narus. Why do I need any extra information? So let's read the question again. V'lichtev rachmona narus v'lo boi bagus. Let the Torah write about narus, which was reflected in the pasuk when it said ein kosef, and I don't need to write v'yotza chinam, which reflects the yamei bagrus. Omar rabo bo ze v'limeid al ze midi dahavi atoisha v'sochir. It's worth noting a Rashi that appeared earlier in the upper part of the narrow lines. As a Rashi says, "V'yotzo chinam." V'lo piresh mosai teitzei. The Torah doesn't spell out when she leaves. So what we have two phrases, and I need the two phrases. Bo zev alimeid al zeh means that because I have two phrases, I then understand that she not only would have left at Bagrus, but she leaves even earlier at Naarus. Had I had only one phrase, so I would have thought that she leaves at Bagrus. I wouldn't have known that she leaves earlier, that she departs from the work situation. Let's take a look at the Rashi. A few, across from here, just a couple lines up. Since the Torah did not specify in an explicit fashion narus, meaning 12 years of age, it's learned, it's derived. We don't have any other basis on which to make her departure dependent. In other words, reaching Narus is a physiological change in her. There's a legal status change in her. So that's probably the time she goes free. So since the Torah was not explicit, though, Hutzrich Lichtev Shneim, it's necessary to write both Narus and Bagrus in the way that the Torah does in its non-explicit form. The Kosav Chad, had the Torah made an allusion only to one Hava Amino Bagrus who Dashminu Kra, it's 12 and a half that she leaves. Aval Narus Lo Mapik Lo, but I would have thought, had I heard only one phrase, that Narus is not going to be the age of departure. Now that I have two phrases, so by default, one of them must be a reference to Na'arus. And this kind of, or this type of approach to scriptures has a precedent. And that's what the Gemara means when it says, Midi dahave atoishav v'sochir. A word about toishav and sochir. An Eved Ivri, a Jewish worker, it's often translated as a Jewish slave. An Eved Ivri is in contrast with an Eved Kanani. Eved Kanani is a heathen that a Jew purchased as an actual slave. The Jew owns him as a piece of property. We're, of course, in very humane terms, but that goes without saying. We're not going to delve into that. But there is another work arrangement that is called Eved Ivri, for lack of a better, for simple translation purposes, we'll refer to him as the Jewish slave. He enters an obligatory work arrangement for 6 years. At the end of 6 years, he then goes free. How a person enters it, why he enters it, etc., there are different reasons for it. We don't have to dwell on that. Just recognize there's something called an Eved Ivri. It's an obligatory work arrangement. He's not like what we call a poel or a sochir, a hired hand that he can decide to leave whenever he wants, a standard worker. This is a unique arrangement called Eved Ivri. An Eved Kenani that we made reference to before is a heathen individual that a Jew might purchase as a slave. If a Kohen purchased an Eved Kenani, which is not the focus of our sukya, let it be known that the Eved Kenani is entitled to eat truma as his master, the Kohen. This Eved is called Kinyan Kaspo. It's an acquisition. It's a financial, a property acquisition. Not so if a Jewish slave, an Eved Ivri, is working for a Kohen. Within the realm of Eved Ivri, there is the work arrangement till 6 years. And then you have the situation that's described in the Torah, where the Eved Ivri is very happy in his arrangement. He has he married a Shifcha, etc. There's quite a bit of detail. But he, if he wants to remain with his master, there's the boring of the ear, and he is able to stay with that master till the Yovel year. The Eved Ivri that we have just described, the six-year arrangement, or the one who arranged for the extension till the Jubilee year, till the 50th year of the Yovel cycle, if he is working for a Kohen, he is not entitled to eat Truma. And we alluded to this before, he's not considered the property of the Kohen. When we speak about these two types of Eved Ivri, the Torah says not only the six-year kind of Eved Ivri does not eat Truma, but even the Jubilee worker, he's going to stay with him till the Yovel year, which could be up till 50 years. He too does not eat Truma. The Torah does not spell out the two types in terms of how long each one is working. It does not spell out in the context of the Truma that we're speaking right now. A Kohen acquired an Eved Ivri. The Torah refers to the two types by the words Toshav and Sochir. The Pasuk says, Rashi quotes the Pasuk, Toshav Kohen V'Sochir Lo Yoichal Kodesh. They are not entitled to eat the Truma tithe. Had the Torah used only one of those words, Toshav or Sochir, what conclusion would you have reached regarding the Eved Ivri not entitled to eat Truma? You probably would have said that the six-year man, he doesn't eat. He's not a real permanent fixture by the Kohen. But a Jubilee, a Yovel type Eved Ivri, he who wanted to remain with his master till the Yovel, maybe he would be allowed to eat from the Truma. He's so much a part of the Kohen's household. So the Torah has two words, and because it has the two words, I know to exclude both of them from Truma rites. This approach is similar to what we said with regard to the Narus and the Bagrus. Being that the Torah makes a double reference to departure, I understand there that she leaves her servitude not only from Bagrus, but even from the earlier stage, from Narus. Now, let's continue in the Gemara text. We said that the approach to the Amo Ivriya departing is similar to the scriptural approach to the Toshav and Socher, which were the Eved Ivris that work by a Kohen and their prohibition in eating from his Truma. Desanya. Toshav. Ze Konui Kinyan Olam. That's a reference to the Jubilee type arrangement. Socher. Ze Konui Kinyan Shonim. That's the Eved Ivri who works only up till 6 years. He doesn't ask for an extension. The Torah tells us that both of these, as we read in the Pasuk, we'll cite it again from the Rashi, Toshav Kohen V'Socher Lo Yochal Kodesh. Neither kind is entitled to eat from the holy food, the reference to the Truma. Did the Torah really have to spell out both? Yomar Toshav. Let the Torah say that the Toshav doesn't eat Truma. And we explained that the Toshav was the 50, the Kinyan Oilam. Oilam means the permanent Eved Ivri. Permanent really means up till the Yovel year, up till year 50. Let the Torah write his prohibition or exclusion for eating truma. The lo yomar sochir, and not bother writing about the sochir, which we interpret as the 6 year man. Vani omer, and I would figure, koni kinyan oilom eino ochel, the Eved Ivri, who is almost a permanent fixture, he's kinyan oilom, and he doesn't eat truma. Koni kinyan shanim lo kol shekein, a person is there quite temporarily, just up till 6 years. All the more so, he's not going to be entitled to eat truma. Why does the Torah have to spell out both? Why, in addition to writing Toshav, does it have to bother even writing about the Sochir? Once I know that Toshav character doesn't eat Truma, certainly the Sochir won't. The Gemara says, Elu Cain, had the Torah written only the word Toshav, Yisiomer, left on my own, I would have figured, oh, Toshav, that word, Ze Konoi Kinyan Shonim. That's a reference to a 6 year worker. Avol Konoi Kinyan Olam, but an Eved Ivri that would have had his ear bored, wishing to remain with his master till the Jubilee year. Oh, hell! If his master is a Kohen, he would be allowed to eat Truma. So, Bo Sochir, Velimed Al Toshav. Therefore, in addition to writing the word Toshav, the Torah writes the word Sochir. She'af Api. And what do we gain by that? By writing, in addition to the word Toshav, you write the word Sochir, I realize that the Torah is talking about two kinds of people. Not only the Kinyan Olam, or I should say, not only the Kinyan Shonim, but even the Kinyan Olam will not eat. You have two words now, Sochir and Toshav. And Rashi, across from here, a couple lines down, says, Bo Sochir Velimed Al Toshav, the Al Korchuch. Once I have two words, I understand Chad Minay Lenirtzahu Da'asa. One of them is referring to the fellow with the bored ear. Omeachar Shinichtavu Shnehem. And now that I have two words, Mashmusa Denirtzah Mitoshav Asya. Once I have two words and I have to choose which word is a reference to the Jubilee type arrangement, I will say that's from the word Toshav. The word Toshav implies someone who's truly dwelling by the Kohen, who's a permanent fixture by the Kohen. That is appropriate for the Kinyan Olam, leaving by process of elimination, or by default, Sochir is the six-year arrangement. And that's what this phrase means, Bo Sochir Velimed Al Toshav. By adding the word Sochir, I understand now that the word Toshav means a Kinyan Olam. Just to repeat ourselves, had the Torah written just the word Toshav, I would have said that's a reference to the Kinyan Shonim, the six-year arrangement. But now that I have an extra word, Sochir, I say that Toshav, as Rashi said, implies someone who's going to be with you on a long-term basis with the Kohen. She'afabi, she'koni kinyan olam, even though he is someone that's obligated to work for you till the Yovel year, which could be up to 50 years, einu ochel, he is not entitled to eat truma. So what has Rabbah demonstrated? That when you have, let's say, two vague expressions, so one sheds light on the other. Omar le Abaye questions. He challenges Rabbah's application of Bozev Alimin Alzeh based on the Toshav Sochir precedent. Abaye says there's a lack of parallel here. Mi Domi. How can you compare the case of the Amo Ivriya to the Toshav and Sochir? Hasam, in the case of the Toshav and Sochir, Trey Gufi Ninhu. You're referring to, they're two different people. You can have two people working at the same time for, in this case, for a Kohen. One is going to work up till 6 years, and the other will work up till the Jubilee year. The Chinami Kosav Rachmona Toshav Nirtzo Lo Yochal. Even if the Torah had spelled out in no uncertain terms that the Toshav Nirtza, that means Toshav, and clarified by word Nirtza, meaning with the bored ear, he is not entitled to eat truma. That, if the Torah spelled it out in a clear way, and the Hodar Kosev Idach, and even so would have written Sochir. In a case like this, I don't need Sochir to shed light on what Toshav means. Toshav was already spelled out. But even so, the Torah might very well have written Sochir, and it's still within the parameters of acceptability. Have a Sochir mil sedasi b'kavachomer. The concept of Sochir in a case like that, where Toshav was spelled out, Sochir then is something that I could have derived through Kal V'chomer logic. Namely, if Toshav Nirtzah doesn't eat Truma, certainly the six-year man isn't going to eat. But nevertheless, the Torah would have stated Sochir. This is a recurring theme in several places throughout the Shas, that information that could have been derived logically without the scripture will at times write it anyway. Elahacha, when you look at the case of the Amlev Ria, it's not parallel to the phenomenon of Toshav and Sochir. By the Amlev Ria, Chad Gufa Hi. There's only one body, one individual. Kinafka lo benarus, when she's gone, left her servitude from age 12, Bagrus mai bayagabe, what she's still doing there at Bagrus, that the Torah has to tell me she leaves at Bagrus. As Rashi says, how can the Torah write something that doesn't exist? The Torah is describing departure at Bagrus, but that can't exist. She's gone free already at the point she reached Narus. Notice then the difference. In the case of Toshav and Sochir, those are two things, two phenomena that can exist simultaneously. You can have two workers. One is a six-year worker. The other one is a jubilee worker. It's a reality. As far as the halachic aspects of the truma limitation or pro-exclusion prohibition, true, I could have stated one and the other I could have figured out through logic. Nevertheless, the Torah writes both, based on the idea of Milsasi Kavachomer, Torah for Kosova Kro. However, to write, to make reference to two entities, two things, where the second entity simply can't exist, namely, if she's gone free at Narus, there is no departure at the point of Bagrus. Why would the Torah then write something that doesn't exist, i.e., departure at Bagrus? She's already departed from Naharus. Ella Omar Abaye. Abaye, as a new approach, we're trying to understand, what do I need the drosha of Yotzeh Chinam saying Eilu Yemei Bagrus? What does it tell me? So what Abaye says, it in fact describes a case of a woman that had been sold by her father into servitude. And she leaves only at Bagrus. She doesn't have, in fact, a Narus stage of departure. You're probably wondering, what do you mean by that? So let's read on in the Gemara. Elo Marbaye, lo mitzrucha, elo lebeger. Beger is the root of the word Bagrus. Elo lebeger de Islinus. Islinus is a woman, a female, that does not physically mature in the normal way. She does not, we've seen Islinus many times throughout the Shas. One of the major characteristics is her barrenness. She's incapable of bearing children. She doesn't mature into let's say, adulthood in the normal way. As a result of her status, of her situation as an islandess, she doesn't have a stage that we call Na'arus. Na'arus is not merely the chronological reaching of 12 years of existence, but it's a halachic status. and the islandess doesn't have that. She goes from katnus, from being a minor, which is the period of time that a father can sell his daughter, and she continues till age. If we find that she's not developing and not maturing in the normal physiological fashion, so we'll end up classifying her as an islandess. She does not become an adult, legally speaking, until age 20. At that point, she reaches bagrus for the islandess. So bagrus for the islandess is at age 20. She doesn't have a na'arus stage. The Gemara explains, Sa'ka Daita Chamina, without the Torah spelling out the Yotzachinam as well as Ein Kosef, had the Torah just stated one, I would have thought, Benarus Tepuk, Bebagrus Lo Tepuk, that Narus is the point of exit. If a person achieves Narus, they leave. The girl leaves, servitude. Bagrus is not a point in time that a person leaves servitude. So that if I had only one phrase, I would have thought that the islandess, when she reaches age 20, she doesn't go free. Komash Malon, by the Torah spelling or saying V'yotzachinam in addition to Ein Kosef, I understand that Bagrus is also an exit point. It's an exit point for the islandess, for the type of woman that doesn't have the Narus exit point. Maskiflo mor baravashi. V'lav kavuchomerhu. Does the Torah really have to spell out something I could have figured on my own? Now, I'm sure everyone is saying, yeah, the Torah will. That will be raised later. That question will be raised later. So what we have to do right now is play along, stay in the flow, and the question then is things that I could have figured out on my own, you don't need the Torah to write it. So what is the Kal Vachomer that is bothering Mor Bar Vashi, the Kal Vachomer that he could have made? Uma simonim are pubic hairs that are characteristic of a normal maturation process. Uma simonim she'ein motzien merishus av. Motzien merishus odoin. In the case of a girl who lives with her father, the daughter that lives with her father, and she has some form of income, the father is entitled to that income up till age 12 and a half, up till her bagrus. The fact that she produces signs, physiological signs of adulthood earlier, at na'arus, at 12, that's simonim, they don't create independence vis-a-vis the girl. Her income, even though she's produced simonim, go to the father. In Hebrew we say, ma'isiyo de'alaviyah. So simonim, that are relatively speaking, we'll say weak in that sense, that they don't, they're not motzi mershusav regarding maisi odeha, yet motzien mershus adoin. We know that simonim, when she reaches Narus and she was sold to another Jew, she was sold as an amo evria. Once she produces simonim, she goes free. Bagrus shemotzia mirshus av. Bagrus, and we can speak about bagrus in the context of an islandess at age 20, that bagrus, which does gain her independence from her father's domain and she keeps her income, enodin shemotzia mirshus odon, then all the more so. Here you see, Bagrus is a stronger exit form, so certainly it will enable her, the islandess, when she reaches her Bagrus, to leave the domain of he who purchased her. So here we have it. Through logic, I understand that the Bagrus the case of Bagrus of the Islandess, she will leave Rishus Adon. I don't need the Torah to spell it out. So we're back to the drawing board. According to Mar Bar Avashi, why does the Torah write V'yotza Chinam as well as Ein Kosef? Ela Omar Mar Bar Avashi Lo Nitzrecha Ela. The pasuk that was that we associated with Bagrus is necessary Ela Leikir Zvina the Islandess. It's a reference to the initial purchase of a girl sold by her father into the work obligation. That kind of girl that turns out to be an islandess, was that a legitimate sale? Salka Daita Chamina, without the Torah spelling out the Yotze Chinam, without the extra phrase, I would have thought the Asyos Simoni Narus Havizvina, girls that produce signs of Narus. So the Torah provides for the father selling them into servitude. However, the lo asio simone narus, a kind of girl that doesn't produce simone narus like the islandess, lo have zvino zvino, her sale is a voided sale. It's an illegitimate sale. There isn't. In other words, this is what I would have thought, that the only kind of girl that can be sold in the first place is the kind of girl that produces simone narus. A girl that does not produce simone narus, her sale is not a legitimate sale. In other words, the father's sale into servitude is not legitimate. We continue at the top of Amud Beis. Chomash malon v'yotzo chinam v'chule. The extra phrase of v'yotzo chinam tells me that even a girl that doesn't achieve Narus, like the islandess, her initial sale was a legitimate sale. The Gemara asks the question we alluded to before. Ulamor Baravashi Diomar Valav Kalva Homeru, regarding Abaye's explanation. It could still have been maintained that Viyotzachinam is superfluous because the information, as Abaye presented it, could have been achieved through Kal V'chomer. So Mar Bar Avashi, who raised his objection to Abaye's approach on those grounds, that's not a solid objection, Ho Amrina, but did we not say, Milsa De'asi B'Kal V'chomer Torah V'Kosav L'Kra? Information that I could derive through Kal V'chomer, the Torah nevertheless will spell it out. So why did Mar Bar Avashi ask his question? The Gemara answers, Hani Mili, that we will give such an answer of Milsid Asib Galvachomer Torah because of a Krah, that's an answer that might be phrased as an answer out of default. It's Hani Mili Hecha Deleko Lishniya. That's where you have no other answer, no alternative explanation, and all you're left with is information that could have been derived through one's own logic. We will tell you that the Torah writes it anyway. That's when you had no other option. Aval hecha de'ikah lishmiya, where you have what to answer, you have with what to account for the extra phrase, I will opt for that alternative explanation. Mishaninon, I will answer that and not explain it as referring to something that I could have come through Kal V'chomer logic. And so Mar Bar Avashi is saying that the extra phrase is needed to inform me that the original sale is a legitimate sale, even though she doesn't reach Narus, having without which I would have thought that only women who achieve Narus, their sales, while minors, are legitimate sales, but not those kind of girls that don't achieve Narus, like the islandess. Therefore, the Torah had to use the extra expression, the Otsuchinam, to tell me even girls that don't achieve Narus are able to be sold by their fathers, while minors, into servitude. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei, a topic heading, which reads, Mokar Noisaf, an additional source, Lekinyin Kesef Isha, that a woman can be married, the marital bond established through cash, in addition to that which we saw already on Daf Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara. V'tano maisi lo mehocha. The Tano, that means a Tanaic source, as opposed to what we saw earlier, which was an Amoraic presentation, the Tanaic source learns that Kesef is the means of establishing a marital bond from the following. And we say, on Daf Gimel Beis, we had the drasha of Rav Yehuda from the Yud in the Pasuk Me'ein Ein V'yotz, we saw V'yotzachinam Ein Kosef. The Yud in that Pasuk, the word Ein, enabled Rav Yehuda to darshan Kesef Kaine. Here we have an alternative approach. Desanya. Ki Yikach Ish Isha Uvoala V'hoyim Lo Sim Sochein V'einov Ki Motza Bo V'chulei. The pasuk describes a couple that a man takes the woman unto himself and has intimacy with her, and she becomes his wife. The hemshich, the continuation of the pasuk, is not relevant for us right now. Ein kicha ela bekesef. The word kicha in the pasuk we read ki yikach is a reference to cash. V'cheinu omer nosati kesef hasodeh kach. Mimeni. Notice you have the word kesef juxtaposed with the word kach. The Gemara asks, do I really need a pasuk to reveal this? V'halo dinu. This marking, the house marking around v'halo dinu, is used to show a balance in structure between what we're learning here and what we'll eventually learn regarding the kinyan bia. We'll appreciate the marking later when you see the entire, let's say, structure of the daf. There's another marking, the double underline, which we'll point out later. At this point, do I really need this pasuk ki yikach ish isha v'ala to reveal to me that kesef is a means of establishing the marital bond? V'halo dinu, through logic, I would have said, Uma Amohivriya. The Amohivriya, we spent a lot of time describing her in our previous discussion. The girl sold by the father into work obligation. She'eno Niknes Babiya Niknes Bekesef. The man who purchases her does through cash. He doesn't purchase her, acquire her through intimacy. Zu sheniknes b'bia, a woman in marriage who can be acquired or married through the act of intimacy to establish their marital bond. Eino din shetikne b'kesef, all the more so kesef should be effective. So why does the Torah have to spell out ki yikach ish isha? I could have derived it through kal v'chomer based on amo ivriya. The Gemara says no, the logic wouldn't have worked. Yavama tochiach. The case of the Yavama would have been raised as an objection. She nikneis b'bia, v'eino nikneis b'kesef. The case of the Yavama, the woman whose husband died leaving no children and is married by the surviving husband's surviving brother, she is acquired through bia, not acquired through kesef. So to present bia as a weak means of acquisition, and upon that base the kal v'chomer logic, as you saw in Amo Ivriya, is simply not a fair, not an accurate presentation of bia. So once I show that bia is not such a weak method of acquisition, I've destroyed the kal v'chomer. And if we were to stop here, then I would say I need the pasuk. I wouldn't have known that kesef is effective. because I would have focused on the case of the Avama, where we found Kesef to be ineffective. The Gemara says, but nevertheless, Ma li Avama, I wouldn't have used Yavama as a precedent setter. Shekain ein niknes bishtar. She's not acquired through a document. Tomar bazu sheniknes bishtar. Would you have said the same with regard to a husband-wife bonding, where the woman is bonded through a shtar? So that with the rejection of Yavama as an objection, I can go back to my original Kal Vachomer. And now a very strange thing happens. Talmud Lomar Ki Yikachish. We have the pasuk that tells me that Kesef is effective. One second. Do I really need the pasuk to tell me that it's effective? Did we not have in the volcano shape that we had before an indication that logic would have enabled me to conclude thusly? You try to upset the logic by citing the case of the Avoma, but we demonstrate that the Avoma is not a point of objection. So the Gemara asks this very question, Ha Loma Likra, why does this Tanaic source have to conclude with a pasuk for Ha Asyala? The effectiveness of Kesef was derived through Kal Vachomer, basing ourselves on the Amo Ivriya. Omar Ravashi, Mishum Deiko Lameimar, the reason I need the pasuk at the end of the day, and I could not rely on the Kal Vachomer from Amo Ivriya, because Meikra Dedina Pircha, at the very, we'll say, foundation of the Dina is the logic, there is a pircha, there is a weakness. The Gemara explains what we mean. Mehecho komaisis law, from where were you trying to derive that kesef is a means of marriage with a woman? Me amo hevriya. That's what we said. But that itself is a weak method of logic. Ma l'am ivriya, the fact that an am ivriya is acquired through kesef, shekain yoitza bekesef. If her father wants to buy her freedom by paying money before the end of her servitude arrives, that can be done. So the am ivriya is not only purchased through kesef, but she can be released through redemption using money. Tomar Bazu, would you say that the same standard should apply to a woman, that acquisition can be achieved, a marital bond can be achieved through money? Sheino yoitza bekesef. She doesn't leave her married status with money. So we find in the case of marriage, the effectiveness of money is more limited than in the case of the Amo Ivriya. So I don't have a Kal Vachomer from the case of Amo Ivriya. Therefore, I need a pasuk, without which I wouldn't know that Kesef is effective in establishing a marital bond. Talmud Lomar Ki Yikach Ish. Therefore, I need this pasuk, as was featured in the Tanaic source. Ve'itzrich lemichtav v'yotzo chinam. The pasuk of v'yotzo chinam ein kosef, that was what we saw as the source for money being effective in establishing a marital bond back on Dav Gimel Amud Beis. I need that source. Ve'itzrich lemichtav ki yikachish, and I need this source as well. In other words, we don't have redundancy. I have two sources, and each one of them I need. This, by the way, is a long point. You notice how we've marked it in the Gemara, and our Tatnose on the side reads that way as well. The Tatnose is the subtopic heading, Tzrichuso L'shnei Mekoros Shekesef Kainavisha, the need for, in fact, two sources. Let's continue. De'i Kosav Rachmono Ki Ikach. Had I had just the pasuk cited from Dvorim Perichov Dalit in the Tanaic source above, Have Amino Kidushin the Yohav Law Baal, Dido Havu. the money that he gives to her. A man gives money to a girl, assuming she's a minor or hasn't reached Bakrus yet, that she would keep the money and not give it to the father. Kosav Rachmona v'yotza chinam. I therefore had introduced the drush of yotza chinam, where we said that in the case of the Amma of Ria, she goes free without the master getting any money, as opposed to the case of the girl leaving her father's house in marriage, where her master, i.e. her father, does get the money. So I need the Yotza Chinam to tell me that aspect of things, that the father gets the money in the case of the minor marriage. V'yi kosav rachmona v'yotza chinam, had I had just that source, daf gimel omid beis, have amina, hecha diava, ihi ledidei, v'kidashtoi, have a kiddushi. I would have thought that if the woman would give the man money for marriage purposes, that would be a legitimate form of marriage. Rashi across from here says lehav a kiddushin. The kevan hashmina de kesef ovid ishus. If I had just the pasuk of yotza chinam and kosef, I would learn from there that money establishes a marital bond. Mali kesef di day, mali kesef di da. Here we have a hava, I mean, of equality, of everything equal. What difference does it make whether it's the man, the husband, the man giving her money, or she giving him money? Lachi hada tana kroz im nachriti behedya ki kach ish, v'lo ki sikach isha leish. Therefore, the other pasuk. Let's go right back to our Gemara text. Kosev rachmana ki kach. Therefore, the Torah, in order to dispel this, we'll call it equality approach, or balanced approach, spells out kikach, indicating man taking woman, meaning man gives her money, velo ki sikach, and not the other way around. Ki sikach would have implied the woman giving the money. At this point, we have a new discussion, and on the side under the note, say the topic heading, Moker de Isha Niknes Vabia, source that a woman can be acquired or the marital bond established through an act of intimacy, where the act of intimacy is done with the express purpose that through this you become my wife. The Pasuk says, Ubo'ala. By the way, we have a little star, so use it parallel with the star above. The Pasuk had said, Ki kach ish isha ubo'ala. What does the word ubo'ala mean? What does it teach us? Melamed sheniknes bibia. It teaches us that she is acquired in marital terms through bia. And structurally, as we saw before, the same thing takes place here, and the same question will be raised later. Is it not so that through logic I could have concluded that bia is effective? Why does the Torah have to spell it out by a man-woman marriage? Falo din hu. Uma din hu means, through logic I could have figured this out. Uma yivoma shein niknes bekesef niknes bebia. The yivoma is acquired by the surviving brother through an act of intimacy, not by his offering her money. She's not acquired through money, but she is acquired through her. The Yibum marriage is established through intimacy. Zusha Nikdes Pekesef, a regular marriage which is established through cash, Eino Din Shenikdes be all the more so, Bia would be effective. Where you find that Kesef is not effective and Bia is effective, where we know that Kesef is effective, certainly Bia should be effective. What do I need the Pasuk for? The Gemara says, Amo Ivriya Tochiach, I can look at the other topic, the topic of Amma Ivriya, and it will present a refutation of this logic. She niknes bekesef, v'ein niknes bebia. Here we have an example of someone that is acquired through kesef, and bia is not effective. So that if you were presenting kesef as grounds for, or presenting kesef, let's say, as a weak form of acquisition, enabling you to present bia as a a stronger form of acquisition through the Kal V'chomer, when you come to Amavri, you see quite the opposite. You see that Kesef is effective and Bio is not effective. The Gemara says, but Amavri really is not a true objection. Ma'al Amavri she'ein kinyona l'shum ishus. The Amavri is a girl acquired for work purposes, service purposes, not for ishus. Ishus is the called bonding of man and woman in a marital context. Well, when you're dealing with a simple work arrangement, so of course bio intimacy is not a means of acquisition. Tomar Bazu, should you say the same thing by a woman, Shekinyona Lishumishus, where the bonding is for marital purposes, which is a main aspect of that is intimacy. Therefore, Bia is effective. So that we can go back to our Kal V'chomer, in the case of Yevama, where we found money is not effective, but Bia is effective. In a case of standard marriage, where money is effective, all the more so Bia should be effective. So I have a Kal V'chomer to tell me about the effectiveness of Bia. Talmud Lomar Uboala. The Pasuk tells me that intimacy is the means of acquisition. The Gemara asks, Veloma Likro, I'll ask you law. What do I need this Pasuk for, Uboala? We just said that the original Kal V'chomer is intact. Omar Ravashi, Mishum De'iko Lameimar, Me'ikora De'dino Pircha. Very similar structure as we saw before, but here we have, of course, a different topic. The reason that I'm not going to rely on the Kal V'chomer is because the original basis of the Kal V'chomer Pircha, it can be challenged. It's weak. Me'echo k'maisis law. From where did you derive your Kal V'chomer? What was the basis of the Kal V'chomer? Mi'avoma. And in making a Kal V'chomer, we presented Yevama as having, we'll say, a more, say, a weak aspect to it, a certain element of limitation. And even so, Bio was effective. But you can't compare the Yevama to the case of a regular marriage. Mali Yevama shekein zukuko ve'emedes. The Yevama, when she finds herself to be labeled as Yevama, there was already a bond established between her and the brother-in-law. Zukuka Viomedes. Upon the death of her husband, leaving no children, and some might even argue even prior to that, there was a yibum bond. The brother-in-law was always there in the event that no children would be produced by his brother. He was there. There was a bond already. So where you have a pre-existing bond, and the bio simply comes to complete the pre-existing bond, that I understand. I understand why by the case of Yevama, bio is effective. Tomar Bazu, would you say the same thing by a strange man and woman that come together, that meet and become husband and wife? Shein Sekuko Viyominis, there's no pre-existing bond. So, where you have no pre-existing bond, I don't know that Bia would be effective. Therefore, I need the Pasuk. Talmud Lomar Uboala. Therefore, the Pasuk informs that Bia is a form of establishing a marital bond. And we can now add, even in the case where there was no pre-existing relationship. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.